belong, become, believe. You're listening to Grace Church of Northwest Arkansas podcast. The message for March 24th, 2024 is called Palm Sunday, Different Dictionary. The speaker is John Ray and the location is Central United Methodist Church, Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Well, hey everybody. Again, welcome. My name is John Ray. This is Grace Church of Northwest Arkansas. If you're listening on the podcast or on Facebook, we're really glad you're here. So, I love old dictionaries. To me, they're like fading Polaroid pictures or musty maps to be explored. They contain words we no longer use. So, Charlie, Ben, Levi, Eli, here's some good vocabulary for you. I know you've been on spring break. But these old dictionaries, they have words like groke and snout fair and curlap. Anybody know what those are? What do you think groke is? What's that sound like, Levi? So to groke is to watch someone silently while you're silent, watch someone else eat. Just to sit silently and watch someone else eat is to groke. Now, come on, snout fair you ought to get. Think about it's a compound word, snout fair. Close. Suitable. It's good looking. Good looking. Is you could say, wow, she's really a snout fair. She's totally a snout fair. And then my personal favorite is curlap. What do you think, Charlie? What do you think curlap means? Have any idea what curlap means? So curlap is that urge you get to scream when you jump in really, really cold water, but you can't make a sound. Like you want to scream, you want to vocalize, and you can't. That's to curlap with that. So these are words that, you know, we don't use anymore like that. But there's also like new words that we have that have different meaning, like catfish and spam and handle. Like these are all words that have taken on totally new meanings since the time that I first heard these words with that. And we won't go into what catfish is here this morning. But language is always evolving. And it's evolving ever more rapidly. And it's important to keep up with, or we may totally miss the meaning of the word, much less the meaning of the meme, right? And meme is another word that is rapidly changing as well. Well, then there are times when a single person redefines a word by their life and teaching, specifically the person of Jesus. He often explicitly said, "You have heard it said, but I say." And then go on and change what was taken as common knowledge. He also did this implicitly through his actions. One of the most significant times was on the day we celebrate today, which is Palm Sunday. This day is one of my favorite Sundays of the year. To me, it's an encapsulation of what I love about being a Christian, along with what I think most of us have or do get wrong about being a Christian. It's also a prime example of people thinking they know what a word or words mean, and Jesus totally redefined it. So let's look at our text. We're actually going to look at our text in the Hebrews. So it's not the specific Palm Sunday text as we're used to, but it deals with a couple ideas that are made paramount in the Palm Sunday triumphal entry that we'll talk about. So we're looking at Hebrews 4, and we're going to start at verse 14. It says, "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest incapable of sympathizing with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and grace whenever we need help. For every high priest is taken from among the people and appointed to represent them before God, to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin. He is able to do so. He is able to deal compassionately with those who are ignorant and erring, since he is also subject to weakness. And for this reason, he is obligated to make sin offerings for himself as well as the people. And no one assumes this honor on his own initiative, only when called to it by God. So, in fact, Aaron was. So also, Christ did not glorify himself in becoming high priest, but the one who glorified him was God, who said, "You are my son, today I have fathered you." And in another place, God says, "You are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek." During his earthly life, Christ offered both requests and supplications with loud cries and tears to the one who was able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his devotion. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through the things he suffered. And by being perfected in this way, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. And he was designated by God as high priest in the order of Melchizedek. Now again, we're looking at Hebrews. There is a lot being pulled out of the Old Testament. There's a lot of context going on. We're going to talk even more about the context of the triumphal entry today. But this idea of this king of peace, Melchizedek, we're going to see, was a major theme throughout Israel's history. Also, we've studied in Exodus and all the different places about how they had the priestly system, the high priest, and they had the system of sacrifices and what that was meant to achieve. And here we see the assertion that Jesus fulfills all those things. So the author of this sermon, whoever she is or he is making an assertion that Jesus fulfills all these things, and in a way also recasts them. Jesus shows us a radically different way to understand what it means to be a king and a priest, as well as what it means to triumph. And as followers of Jesus, we have to become ever better and more understanding of how Jesus redefines basic words. Specifically, we need to know what kind of king and priest Jesus is and what triumph means for him and for us. You see, Jesus' triumphal entry, and this is one of the reasons why I love this Sunday, is because I've had the chance. Holidays like this give someone who teaches the idea to further develop ideas over the years. And so now I've had a good, probably 10 years of looking at the triumphal entry in Palm Sunday from this particular lens of irony. And we need to understand that Jesus' triumphal entry is an ironic skewering of tradition, of a traditional Roman pageantry. It's also a dramatic demonstration of Jesus' own nature as an utterly relatable, understandable, compassionate, and capable advocate for us. So I first heard about this, and again, if you've been here on Palm Sunday, you've heard this before. But Jane and I had the chance to visit Rome a number of years ago, and we were in the museum. And in one of the museums, you walk into, and it is the Room of Triumphal Entry. And what you see is this incredible picture painted all the way around, all four corners of the room, of a triumphal entry. And a triumphal entry is something that the Romans engaged in as their display of power and dominance. It was their way of exuding power, of declaring their might. It was a way of cowing their enemies, of overawing their citizens. It was a way of just establishing their dominance with it. I mean, they're just showing off, is what they're doing. And sometimes a triumphal entry would go on for days if it was from a major campaign. And they would start by sending all the slaves that they had captured, the conquered occupants, whoever they fought in first. And then they would send in all the treasure that they took from them. And then finally the army would come in, and then the emperor, the general would come in last. And there would be songs and waving branches and all kinds of things going on. That's what a triumphal entry, that was the definition at the time of what a triumphal entry was. And Jesus, what does Jesus do? He turns this on his head. Instead of coming in on a charging stallion, instead of an army, instead of, you know, the conquering, the loot from conquering stuff that comes in the way bearing gifts of the people, without giving the people everything. But even more, something recently I just learned this year is that this actually took place in between two actual triumphal entries, or two rebellions, and against one triumphal entry. So we have to remember that Jesus' triumphal entry, his life is situated in between two rebellions of the Jews. We have the period of the Maccabees, which preceded this by just a number of decades, where there was an uprising and a brief time of almost autonomy for the people of Israel, but then again they were conquered by the enemies. And then soon to come, within a couple decades of Jesus' death and ascension and resurrection and ascension, is going to be the final destruction of Rome by the enemies. So this is a tense period. Jesus was born into a nominal, and if you're like me, when you study the Bible, you always hear about the Pax Romana, the peace that Rome put on the world. Listen, it wasn't peaceful if you weren't Roman. It was not peaceful if you weren't Roman. There may have not have been open conflict at times, but you were oppressed. It was a tense time. So Jesus is born into this time, and then specifically during Holy Week, Jesus' own triumphal entry follows Pilate. Pilate didn't live in Jerusalem. This is something often we fail to realize, and I forget it often too, because I think, oh, they took him to Pilate at his, you know, at his castle there in the fortress, the Antonian fortress there in Jerusalem. He didn't live there. He lived on the coast. He lived on the Mediterranean coast in probably what is now Gaza. And he only came into Jerusalem during Holy Week with a triumphal entry. Now, not a grand one, not a huge one like he had conquered the battle, but definitely a show of force before Holy Week, because he didn't want the Jews getting any ideas during Holy Week about starting another insurrection. So just days before Jesus enters, Pilate comes in on his horse and his chariot with all his armies and all the flags and all the various banners. And what do the banners say? Caesar. All the banners, Caesar. And he would be ragtag, Mongol crew of disciples, and people, you know, waving their palm branches and stuff, and singing Hosanna. And then later, Jesus. Listen, this is the political soldier. He redefined words. Jesus is writing. With this whole thing. So, what are the things that he's refining? Well, there's three essential terms that we get here. So, first of all, Melchizedek. We hear that, it sounds like one day, or like one night. Like, that would be like if I just called Sean Esri, or Sean McEwen, Jeff Esri, Sean McEwen. If I just use that as one name, like people do that with me all the time, right? John Ray. They're like, John Ray, what's your last name? Right? Melchizedek. Well, it's actually, that's King Salem. Salem is Zedek, is peace. So it would be like if we said King Arthur, and you're like, well, who is King Arthur? No, that's King Arthur. So Melchizedek is a compound name. It's two things. It's the King of Peace. And so Jesus takes this idea of king, or a Caesar. Caesar is just a Latin word. And redefines it, right? He takes this idea of the world's idea of the king, of a Caesar, of an absolute ruler, authority, and he says, I'm going to make the king one who reigns by serving. I'm going to be the king who gets glory by giving, who projects and saves by self-sacrifice, and who enlarges his kingdom by making peace. He redefines the whole world. He turns it absolutely on its head, but still retains the word itself. And this is where it gets frustrating at times, because you think, well, why don't you just come up with a different term? Like, wouldn't it be easier just to have a different term? But y'all, we're limited by language. We only have a finite ability for imagination. And we are trying to still embody the idea of someone who has authority. It's just the way they're doing it. And this this is the same thing with this idea of peace. Like, we hear a lot of peace right now with all the conflict going on, peace talks and peace treaties and pushing for, you know, ceasefires and things like that. But this is, this peace that Jesus brings is not just an absence of war or a promise of control, but is the experience of the presence of the one who transcends every war, terror, demand, affliction, tragedy. This is a transcendent idea beyond scripture. This peace that Jesus is Melchizedek, he is the King of Peace, is a peace that transcends circumstances. That goes beyond the peace treaty, goes beyond the ceasefire, goes beyond the détente or the armistice. Because with every détente, with every peace treaty, with every ceasefire, there's always the promise of another fight. There's always the promise of another fight. This peace with Jesus transcends. And it also inhabits in the midst of the conflict. While there still may be external conflict, Jesus brings peace within that. It is something that is not imposed from the outside, but something that grows from the inside. So again, Jesus is redefining this word. And this goes along with triumph, right? In our idea, in our hyper-competitive, hyper-violent world, there is always this idea of winning or triumph means someone else loses. There can be no winner if there's not a loser, right? What is it? I'm going to mess the quote up, right? But if you're not first, you're last, right? With that. That's it. Ricky Bobby, the famous theologian. Ricky Bobby, with that. Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus refuses to refute to a triumph at other people's cost. Now, we do see him. We do see plenty of imagery about defeating death, about defeating sin, about defeating Satan. It's never about defeating people. It's never about people. It's never about people being the losers. People are always set free by Jesus' victory. Can you imagine? It's like the Cowboys win the Super Bowl and everybody wins. In Roland, everybody wins. Like, right? It's just incomprehensible. It's hard for us to even conceptualize that, right? We're sitting here going, what? How? That doesn't make sense, and it doesn't. Within our context, in our definition of the word, triumph, a triumph where everyone wins, where the person that maybe we are against wins, and then we win as a result, doesn't happen. Except it does. It happens with Jesus. It happens when we see. We're going to see the ultimate triumph of Jesus. So what? So what about these things? I mean, that's great. This is good. First of all, what's the opposite? Well, the opposite is to continue to do things like this. Violent. Win, lose. The winners taking all, the losers having none. Peace being transactional, temporary, always ready to be not peace with God. A king who just takes, who just glories, who takes it with music, and you and over with God. And listen, we have plenty of time. And because of this deficiency, because of our inability to understand the new meanings of these words, we repeat these even if we're I want to be careful how I say this because we talked about it. About, look, the Bible is incredibly political. Those people who say, well, politics has no business in the church, they don't know what to talk about. Politics is just how people make decisions. Everything is political. What the church can never be is partisan. The church can't be partisan. There is an element of the the church now that is incredibly close. And they are using the old vocabulary. They're using the old definition. They're saying, we are going to conquer by force and by violence. We are going to take over. That if we win, that when we win, everybody else will lose. And they have failed to understand the new definition of the words that Jesus has established. And it is doing unbelievable damage in our world. In so many places, need so many. In Grace Church, there's not a lot of truth. We're not powerful. We're not. But we can be faithful. We can learn the new definitions. We can practice the new definitions that Jesus gives us. We can stand in opposition, not by violence, not by force, not with condemnation, but by the fire of witness. We can show these new definitions of these words and how this works. And then we can trust the one who defined them for us. We can trust that Jesus. We can shout our hosannas to the Savior on the donkey with the ragtag group and not worry about the general, the Caesar, the king, the army, and the men, and the TV platform. And that's definitely true. Lent has been weird for me this year, y'all. I don't know if it was just the allergy attack or what, but I've had a hard time getting into Lent. I don't know if it's because it's so early this year, too. But if it's been weird for you, I want to invite you, like I'm going to do, is like, I'm going to take Holy Week, and if I don't get a whole Lent, I'm going to have a Holy Week. Like, if I, as weird as it's been leading up to this, this next week, I can do Holy Week. I can make it a week. And I'm going to dive into all those things that I said I was going to do. And I'm going to participate in Tenebrae. Tenebrae is one of my favorite services of the year. Coming up Friday night with that. The weather looks like it's going to hold for us for Easter to be together Sunday morning. And so we'll have an alternative, a weather alternative if it starts looking bad with that. But I am going to seek this week to really lean into the story of Jesus. To let Jesus set the agenda. To let Jesus define the words. And let Jesus be the one who will be fine.
Thank you for listening to Grace Church of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
If you would like to give, you can go to gracechurchnwa.org/give.
You can find more about us online at gracechurchnwa.org. Grace and peace.